Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews. We're like a book club for people who hate reading. This month we're doing films that are underrated. We bring you a Simpsons episode, and we bring you a special review of the short film A Girl and Her Gun. So the description of Matchstick Men is another IMDb classic. A phobic con artist and his protege are on the verge of pulling off a lucrative swindle when the former's teenage daughter arrives unexpectedly.
It's an interesting way to say that Nicolas Cage had a daughter in this film. The former what? The former phobic con. Anyways, so this one's got Nick Cage, it's got Sam Rockwell and Alison Lohman. And, you know, I actually really enjoy Sam Rockwell. I think he's a great actor. Did a movie of a while back of his.
Seven Psychopaths.
And we also did Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
That's
as
right.
Well,
yeah.
Which is another really great Sam Rockwell role. So I think he did a great job. We look at Nick Cage in this one. I think this one is something that we don't see him do very often.
You mean act?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have an argument there.
Way of describing it.
I was kind of wondering if when this movie came out, he was talking about what type of accent he's going to choose, because his accent's the same one, and everybody's wondering, where's that accent from?
His psychotic brain.
So I'm going to say something that I don't think I've ever said together at the same time. I liked Nicolas Cage in this movie. there's movies he's in that I find entertaining, but I've never said good job and Nick Cage in the same sentence.
It's
pretty rare. I would agree.
Rare? I'd say it's almost impossible.
It's not that he can't do a good job. It's just that he's almost a little too crazy for his own good sometimes. You know?
Yeah. And one of my other favorite Nick Cage films is Face Off, because I find it amusing to watch. Whoa. Hold on, to watch John Travolta's version of Nick Cage and Nick Cage's impersonation of John Travolta. I think that's a really funny part of that film. That's the only thing I really enjoy about that entire film. But, you know, I got to say, this is one of the few, if not the only, Nick Cage movie that his co-star doesn't carry the film. Think about that.
I would also say Con Air.
But I mean, well, Sam Rockwell has a tendency to sort of just kind of dissolve into the character. So he's not really, he's a scene stealer, but steady in the background. His characters are just incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
But he can totally hold a movie.
Anybody
out there who hasn't seen that flick Moon, it was an independent movie that he did. Basically, he was the entire cast. It was awesome. Freaking fantastic movie.
I actually agree with Ryan. He's not heavy-handed. Every movie Nick Cage is in, even if he's not supposed to be the star in it, he just sucks up the film.
Well, what's kind of funny about this one is both of them, both Nick Cage and Sam Rockwell, they really feed the material in this movie. I agree with you that it's underrated. Rated, honestly, because it got really mixed reviews when it came out. Some of them thought it was, you know, sort of same old con artist sort of a movie where you get the twist, then the double twist, then the triple twist, and it's sort of this chess match with the audience.
Yeah,
and don't forget this.
I think the characters. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, don't forget, this is a Ridley Scott film.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of.
Did a Ridley Scott just.
This is coming from Blade Runner, Aliens, The Martian. This is a director who has a ton of tools in his bag.
A lot of chops, yeah.
And I got to say, to talk a little bit about Nick Cage's character, I love the kind of. The twerks, the weird things he gives.
Ticks.
That's it, the twerks.
Yes,
there's a scene, something I want to see. Holy shit. I love the ticks he gave his character, from the vocals to the eyes to the rituals. I mean, this was a really fleshed out character for
him. But not in the over-the-top way that we're kind of used to seeing Nick Cage, you know. By the way, anybody thinks that I'm giving undue shit to Nick Cage, go watch Season of the Witch, then talk to me. but really, if that's
Or Ghost Rider.
That's the thing that we've sort of come to expect from Nick Cage, is this big, giant, crazy hair over the top sort of face-off performance. But when he's actually given the opportunity with just, you know, great material and a halfway interesting story, he serves it, you know, really well.
No, I agree. And this isn't like Gone in 60 Seconds, where Nick Cage was the least interesting part of the movie.
So that's the thing, is those movies, they're all fluff. I mean, it's all fluff, where you have this guy who can kind of deliver some halfway decent one-liners, like in Con Air.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
by the way, I love Con Air. I'm just saying.
No, I agree. I actually like Gone in 60 Seconds, but the best actor in the whole movie is that 1967 GT500. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the part about this movie that, and it was really obvious, but I was thinking about it, is this movie doesn't really hint it's a con like a lot of these type of movies.
Yeah, it doesn't give away its hand.
I mean, it was obvious.
As a movie goer, I think you sort of feel it coming anyway, but at the same time, you're so kind of engrossed in the actual characters that you really forget that there's probably going to be this twist. It's a classic misdirection.
Kind of
maybe
way better than what they had in Sixth Sense or The Happening.
The director, He Who Must Not Be Named. to me, it was obvious what was happening, but I think if you forget the fact that I'm thinking, you know, a couple of head steps of the movie, they didn't play it off really well. They didn't do what Swordfish did, which is give little hints. And I was really amazed. I was even surprised where they took it at the end, where he had to chaotically chase down his ex-wife and in a way only Nick Cage can do it.
Yeah, that was kind of creeper style.
Yeah, it's like, I know where you've always been.
That's the part of the con that I really dug. I mean, because the actual, you know, what it turns out to be, because you got sort of every level. You know, you got your low-level things, the training montage, if you will, of this flick with him and his daughter. But then when you finally get to sort of like the big reveal, even if you sort of saw it coming, was that the actual story, the character story behind it with sort of his protege, Sam Rockwell, kind of student becomes the master, sort of. He's been playing the ultra, ultra long con just because he's so acutely aware of this guy's, his tics and his idiosyncratic behavior. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, the one part of this movie that I thought deserved much more credit than it did was the end con. When it did the, if you ever watched the original Mission Impossible, not the shitty movies, the TV series, they actually did, it was pretty much the whole show was basically that. And that was something that I really appreciated. That was up on a rooftop somewhere. And that was impressive. I really liked that.
You mean the hospital scene? Okay.
I was trying not to give too much away just for the hell of it.
We spoil every damn movie we talk about. Come on.
True. I loved the hospital scene. That whole thing was really well done.
Yeah, I like the fact that they kind of had it played off on both types, where you even have the detectives in the other room kind of playing along with each other of, you know, you can't hear anything over the beeping and all that stuff. But now my big thing was, I wonder how much Sam Rockwell paid everybody.
Why?
Because the girl says she got ripped off.
Oh.
And then I wonder how much he paid the doctor and how much he paid the detectives, if he paid them at all.
See, I was thinking they were in on the con and they were just his friends, you know.
That very well could be. But, I mean, if you think about how well Sam Rockwell's character was, he's always looking for a way to cheat somebody out of something. And that's the character he played, which I think he did a fantastic job. And I really appreciated the fact that most of the film was only between really three characters.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't very much interaction with any other characters besides those three.
I would almost say two. Give me four. I mean, this is kind of a stretch. I'd say Nick Cage.
Oh, the doctor.
I'd say, well, Nick Cage and Nick Cage when he just goes over the edge. I'd say two characters.
Okay, I could see that. So Nick Cage with his placebo pills.
Yeah.
And Nick Cage without them.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah.
He's saying that Nick Cage played two characters, his psychotic, phobic self and the drugged up thinking he's fine self.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Nick Cage plays a really, really good kind of crazy.
Nick Cage plays crazy good? I don't think he's acting.
I mean, I think in certain ways he is. I mean, he might be drawing on personal experience, but yeah, I mean, like you brought up, and as far as the tics and the quirkiness, he's got a really unique. I mean, that was a unique choice, you know, that he made. I'm sure he and, you know, the filmmakers kind of went over, you know, what it should be, but the way that he played it was really, really interesting. It was a bitchin' performance.
I'm still flabbergasted at the fact that we're all saying the same thing about Nick Cage. I mean, Mr. Ghost Rider himself.
I mean, look at it. There's a reason that he's such a big name that he's just done those paycheck movies like Ghost Rider.
No, I agree. I think this is one thing I'd love to see Nick Cage getting back to, is taking roles that makes you sit back and go, whoa, this guy can act, instead of fact that...
I mean, every now and again, I mean, you know, he comes out with like an adaptation where it just blows your hair back, you know? Because
I think, I don't know if he's made any movies since this movie was made that I would say that I was impressed by.
Yeah, I have to go through the list, because he sort of perpetually makes, you know, like a movie a year, more or less, whether
we
sort of know about it or not.
So he's the Steven Seagal of... whatever acting style he is.
Well, you know, a lot of people do that.
He goes from action to drama to action to drama to action to drama. See, kids movie, action, drama. It's kind of what he keeps on doing.
I'm also thinking maybe it's kind of my theory of acting, is each actor has at least one genre or one type of character they're good at. And I'm thinking this type of character is really his butter zone. I mean, Con Air was kind of similar, a little bit neurotic. I think the same way we're Gone in 60 Seconds. Both characters, not as much as this one.
Well, the film, you were saying that you don't think he's really made a good film since this. I mean, there's a few of his ancillary ones that I haven't seen. But the one that I would say that I enjoyed after this one, but it wasn't because of his acting, it was because of the other characters that outshined him, was Kick-Ass. And, I mean, even his role as Big Daddy in that one, I mean, I don't think was a really fantastic job. It wasn't horrible. It was kind of like,
you know,
standard, I guess. You know, standardish.
I would give you that. I guess I should say movies that he carried, like he was the title character, you know, the top billing.
I don't think there's very many in his repertoire that
I think
up to this quality.
I think Nick Cage is sort of at war with his craziness, but he's got kind of the it factor, you know. That sort of, because I'm sitting here trying to think, like, yeah, man, damn, he was good in Kick-Ass. Why did I like him so much? And I really couldn't put it into words. So I mean, it's really just that sort of charismatic performance that kind of just bleeds through no matter what shitty movie or role or good role or what have you that he's doing at the moment.
I totally agree. I watch his movies just because I suspect it's going to be a train wreck in motion.
I mean, dude, seriously, I watch Con Air and The Rock at least once a year. They're not good movies. You can't sit there and defend that.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So this movie, I'm beyond impressed with. I'm trying to think more characters that I like, and honestly, I don't think you could have picked a better cast from the chick, you know, from Angela, the chick who played Angela.
She was 22 at the time, by the way.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yahtzee.
She played a really great teenager.
Yeah. And Sam Rockwell, I do think he's the runaway star in this movie, though. Because he blends in.
Sam Rockwell's quietly one of the best actors in the world.
He's an amazing character actor.
He is. I don't think I've seen a movie with him in it that I haven't liked on some level. And I mean, I still say Confessions of a Dangerous Mind is one of my all-time favorite Rockwell films.
It's dude, for sure. And that's that was like actually, that was George Clooney's.
Hello? Hello?
Try not to step over me. Yeah, it was a George Clooney film that was fantastic.
Yeah.
The thing I also liked about this film is how they basically talked about what a con man is, and his moral fiber as a con man. This character, for being a Nick Cage movie, of course it's Ridley Scott, that's why, is really fleshed out. Each character is very individual. There may be some sort of archetypal character, but they're really well done.
Yeah.
And I think that's chops to the director than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, but you got Ridley Scott. I mean, that guy is, he's one of probably the top five directors of, you know, the 20th century, actually, if you really think about it.
Oh, easily.
Not really a movie that you can just be like, no, not a lot of fan. I mean, he sort of universally makes pretty good movies, but actually kind of dialed it back for this one, you know, coming off of stuff like Blade Runner and Alien, these big $100 million movies, you know, really, really scales it back and kind of, you know, had, I actually should have looked this up as far as where the source material was, or if it was just
a, from like a book. Original screenplay. It's actually, from what I understand, it's based on a book. I don't remember the name of the book.
Okay, that would make sense, because it actually, the actual story and the way that it's told is really good.
But, you know, the thing I want to mention about this film is that it's not, like, Ryan's talking about, you know, the Ridley Scott films. You got, like, Blade Runner, Aliens, all these really, you know, action-packed films. But this is not an action-packed film. This is a story-driven film. There's no real action scenes. There's nobody, you know, shooting anything or running from an enemy type thing.
But I would say Ridley Scott has the ability to tell a story, a very good story within that narrative action. So I think the one key thread this has is there's a really good story in every one of his movies. Whether you like the movie or not, there's still a story. There's still some flesh in there.
Yeah.
What do you give this movie, Ryan?
Four and a half, man. I mean, there's really not much wrong with this movie.
Yeah.
There's really not much wrong. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, you can kind of see maybe a couple of these cons coming. They telegraph a little bit if you're paying attention. But as sort of for most movies. But I mean, as far as just the material and the execution by the actors, I mean, yeah, dude, 4.5.
James?
Yeah, I gotta agree with Ryan on the actual same thing, because I was, you know, it's not a perfect movie. It's not like a 5 out of 5, but it does deserve a very high rating. So 4.5. I agree. It deserves it.
You know, I give it a 4. I liked the movie. I don't know. I'll stick with the standard 4. Basic same reasons, just half a point less.
Yeah.
And so next we're going to switch to The Simpsons, and that was James's pick. So
we're doing, Brian can correct me, I believe it is season 6, episode 18, A Star is Burns. This one, you know, I am a huge Simpsons fan. I don't really talk about it in this show, but I'm a really big Simpsons fan. I watched all the way up until 2002 when Fox and
Matt Groening
had issues, and I stepped out of watching The Simpsons after that. But I hear the show's doing great. But this one, out of all the seasons that I have 12 of them, this one has always been my favorite episode. And I could rave about it, but I would leave it over to John, who's not a big Simpsons fan. Ryan kind of is on board with the Simpsons, but
maybe
I want to have you start off with what you think about this.
I would say maybe someday we'll release that infamous quiz of yours on the.
I've changed it from quiz to test.
Okay, test. I guess it'll be closed book.
It's 100 questions.
This was one of the few, didn't really watch when I was a kid, didn't really watch much Simpsons. Not that I wasn't allowed, just really wasn't my thing. But this was one of the first one that I remember James saying, you've got to watch this. And this was probably one of the few that really impressed me. That wasn't a lot of standard Simpsons gags, but still was at the same time.
Yeah.
Very well. It was one of the few crossovers of Simpsons that I can remember.
It had John Lovitz come in to play Jay Sherman, who is the critic.
And that was a short-lived cartoon series.
Yes,
thank
and
God.
That actually was a cartoon series for those of you who missed it.
It was a cartoon. It was pretty funny, but it was pretty short-lived.
Yeah.
I didn't like that cartoon.
It wasn't the greatest, but, you know.
I liked it, honestly.
It was a little heady for us when we were like 12.
Actually, although we didn't really describe the plot of this episode.
I was going to get
plot.
Into it.
Oh,
but you
okay,
can do
you
it.
You can do it. Well, they find out that Springfield is one of the nation's crappiest cities of all time. They hold a town hall, and they decide to go along with having the whole town. Anybody could put in a film and have Jay Sherman come out, and they would rate the films. So it was just an idea to possibly bring in some tourists and some people into the town.
I think it would help if the Springfield was actually in a state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, that's one of the big running gags.
Yeah.
I honestly, the burn. No, who's the character? The drunk Barney.
Yes, Barney Gumbel.
Barney Gumbel's film is probably my favorite. It's really hard to describe this, honestly, the Simpsons episode without seeing it. It's one of the few times you realize the bastards behind the Simpsons are actually really amazing. They just don't show it all the time.
Yes.
This is just an amazing episode. I'm just going to say you've got to watch it. It's one of the few that I think when the Simpsons ends, it'll be the one in the best of, probably in the number one spot.
Yeah, this one is one of my favorite top rated ones.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely going to break into a top 10 list. But honestly, I would say this is kind of quintessential when Simpsons are really firing. They have such a high concept right at the beginning of the episode. It's par for the course, you know, like we're the least popular city in the country. What do we do about it? You know, comedy ensues.
Yeah.
But this one, it was kind of this like inside baseball sort of thing where they get to talk a little shit about critics, which is always freaking hilarious because critics suck. Yes, I realize the irony, and I do think we suck too.
And the popularity contest that the Oscars are.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, those little subtle jabs. I mean, it's kind of what they were for. Now,
and we don't care if you're popular; just watch our show.
What James is referring to by sort of season 12, right in there, when Groening and whatnot sort of stopped being writers and more of the creative consultant kind of a type. We were from sort of the original days of The Simpsons. I fully recognize that people far younger than us would have sort of their own version or their own generation, you know, that just went on. Like, I don't watch my parents' Saturday Night Live.
I don't think there's a lot of people who are younger than us that realize that Simpsons is a spinoff television show either.
Yeah.
Which it is.
It was a thing on Tracy Ullman's show back in the day and then quickly got its own spot just because it was so damn funny.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, I really think it's one of the best shows, especially right up until about season 12, 13 in there. That's why I consider canon, you know?
So I want to bring one thing in for audience viewers who may not be familiar with The Simpsons. This is one of the few episodes that doesn't have running gags. Like, there's quite a lot of Simpsons episodes that they refer to something back like a season before or even farther than that. And this is one of the few Simpsons that doesn't have inside jokes along with it. So that's one of the other reasons why if I'm introducing somebody to The Simpsons, this is one of the first episodes I show them. Because you don't have to have seen, you know, six seasons to get all the jokes.
And you can really get the flavor of it and get sort of what the show is about and the direction that it's coming from pretty easily just from that episode.
Yeah.
So we're going to give this episode a must-watch, because I actually agree this is an amazing episode. And with that being said, we do have a Facebook page. Love us, hate us, let us know. And you can also donate to Old Guy Tech TV and Roflix Reviews to help keep the lights on. And also tell you, we are now an audio podcast. You can catch us on great sites such as Podbean, Stitcher, and more. And now we're going to go to, we were specially asked to review a short film by the writer and director, Paul Holdbrook. Hopefully I'm saying his name right, of Shunk Films. The short is titled "A Girl and Her Gun."
Wonder why Ryan's over there giggling.
I'm sorry, I just like the way you said it, like a fucking sportscaster. A girl and her gun.
I probably say this about short films too much, but I really liked this short film, and it's roughly 18 minutes long, and when storytelling is done well, like this. It's amazing. They had 18 minutes to execute a story, get everybody to immediately understand the story or get the drift of the story. This is really well done, really pulled off. The color's amazing, and this is also a UK film. It'll be sometime soon going to hit the indie film and short film circuits soon. It has not been released to the public. So,
yeah, you know, you're right in the sense that this film is really well told. And I got to give a lot of credit to Matilda Randall.
Yes.
She was the one referred to as the girl. You find out at the end that her name is actually Sarah, but she only had one line in the entire film. I think she did a fantastic job being able to tell her story through her facial expressions.
And body language.
And her body language. That is not an easy skill to get.
I would say one of the highlight scenes for me on that particularly was when she was in school. There's this boy and girl that are kind of beating up on her, and her head's down, her hair's over her eyes. That to me was one of the scenes that just really told how she was feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a bunch of things I liked about this. First of all, serious props to the filmmakers on this one, because the composition of this was really great. I mean, a great eye for framing a shot in kind of such a way that you're always really focused on her. That's, you know, that's who it's following. First of all, I actually really like the opening credits.
You there? I don't know if, though, but I agree with Ryan. What were you saying, Ryan? You were cut off.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I really like that genre specific intro. But for it being kind of a sort of a love letter to genre movies,
darn,
that spaghetti western. Interesting the way they kind of ended it.
Weren't you happy to see Lee Van Cleef?
You have all this symbolism and whatnot with her sort of plight and the films that she sort of identifies with, yeah. and things like that, and then happens to find a single action Colt single action army, which is basically the same gun you'd be using in a Western movie. By the way, that's the one thing that actually irritated me. Well, I have to assume that it's a replica of a gun, because an actual single action army in the States would be running about $5,000 or $6,000. So that lady complaining that she couldn't find anything
of value. I would say one of the reasons I think she didn't find anything of value is she didn't know what she was looking for.
She hints that the person she's talking to knows what she's supposed to be looking for.
Yeah, I do think maybe she, this is kind of a guess in the character, maybe this is a character that doesn't know a lot, specifically maybe like the worth of firearms, especially in a country when they're really hard to get.
I was really just making a joke. But no, seriously, getting back to just kind of the way it was shot and the way it was framed, not really giving a face to the bullies and the people outside of her apartments very much, and still really just focusing on her reaction to her incredibly crazy situation.
Yeah.
But I think I get his point. I'd really like to hear from Paul Holbrook and see what is his sort of message was, if it was kind of just an allegory to, you know, what it is to, you know, have a gun in that kind of a stressful environment, and it's not always a hero story kind of a thing.
I gotta say one thing, I think that this short film were really hit it off with everybody, is everybody has similar experiences with this. So this automatically, without really introducing a whole lot, you automatically know what she's going through or feeling to some degree or another. The other thing I thought was amazing, like Ryan said, was how the Westerns became kind of her salvation in a way. And how the way I thought it was going to end was going to be like Pale Rider. Hmm. And yeah. I love the twist at the end. I'll be honest, I saw it coming a little bit. But I love how instead of externalizing it, it was an internalized punishment. Because she's like, I'm tired of it, instead of doing the Pale Rider.
Yeah, I have a name. I'm a person.
I mean, I actually kind of felt a little bit of a bait and switch, because I really kind of got like the Matilda, not the actress who played the girl, but the Matilda from Lyon. Luke Besson's movie. I really got that kind of a vibe, like, oh, this chick's, I hope she doesn't go, you know, Columbine on everybody, but I sense a little vigilante justice coming somebody's way.
Well, you know, the thing I got to say about the film,
it's just because I'm an American, though, I think. I think I just showed my colors.
Yeah, but I'm going to approach this from a different angle than you guys are.
A left angle?
Well, I think the way that they portrayed everything, a lot of shorts seem trying to fit everything in a short amount of time. You know, we talked about shorts and, you know, we've said that they can be 5 minutes, they can be up to 40 minutes, you know, type thing. But I think this being told in 18 minutes was really well done, because a lot of shorts seem to get disconjointed at times. Yes. I thought this one was followed in a very systematic, very well thought out direction.
I totally agree. And there wasn't any lost scenes. This was very well stitched together.
Yeah, wasn't any wasted film footage. I got to give that hats off to Paul Horbrook as the director and writer of this one. I'm not sure how you guys went about the storyboard process or anything, but whatever you guys did, you did a fantastic job with it. And as Ryan said, I did get the Luc Besson type of feel on it. I also got a little bit of kind of the Quentin Tarantino with some of the – it could have been just because of the Western way you did it. It kind of followed along with how he did in Kill Bill. But
well, that's what I was saying. It's kind of a love letter to the genre, whereas Tarantino did the same sort of thing. You know?
Yeah, so I appreciate that, because we've also mentioned that we are Quentin Tarantino fans and Luc Besson fans.
But I'm a big Western movie fan.
Yeah, there you go. And a big Western movie fan. So looking at it that way, but I think the way that he brought it up, you could, like John was saying, he kind of saw it coming, is because the film really shows that this girl doesn't have anything. Her escape really is the TV, and even her mom's encroaching on that territory with her boyfriend. What does she have left? She goes to school. She's getting no help from her
teachers.
Yeah, teachers or peers or whoever that guy was. I don't know if he was supposed to be, you know, a monitor or what, but he just kind of looked at the situation and ignored it. So the ending, I think she's crying out saying, hey, I am somebody. And the only person who even saw that she was somebody was the officer who was at her father's bedside when he died. So I kind of want to know a little bit why he was saying your father is a hero in the beginning of the film, because they don't explain that.
Well, but I got the impression that her dad was the only one that kind of gave a shit, and now she lost him. It was sort of the end of it all.
And what had happened is she lost all hope. And
I would add, there was one more person who cared. It's probably because that was her job, was the lady from, was it the council or whatnot? The lady that knocked on her door.
Yeah, but she wasn't.
And I think that the reason why she didn't realize is that could have been her moment for call for help. Because at that point in the film, she hadn't been to school in a couple of days. No food. You know, it was just like her and everything that she had that really held her life together had gone.
Yeah.
And I do think, even though part of the ending was predictable, I was okay with that.
Yeah.
Because it's just like my theory on nudity is, if nudity is part of the plot, then it's okay. But if it's excess, it's a waste.
Yeah.
And I think they told a more poignant story.
I agree.
The way that they did it. Because the way that I was sort of suggesting, you know, like that she went a little vigilante on everybody was sort of the symbolism that they were driving towards
she would.
The gun and with the films that she was watching. But then sort of just snapping it back into this, like, just distressed young.
Darn.
Yeah.
Young girl.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, you know, the distressed moment of it, and that you're wanting an out, and this is the only option you can see.
And the very ending scene was she was in the hospital.
Yeah, and
there was the cop. The
officer.
There was a cop at the beginning. I really liked that, because in the back of my mind, I'm hoping she's going to make a recovery. They see somebody who really likes her, like that has hope from her. And that was the one part that's like, hey, there's a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and I think we as people still love hopeful messages, and we like people who triumph. And I think that was the ending I really like, because there's a chance for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when she was standing over the bedside, pointing the gun at her mom's boyfriend and her, it was kind of like you wanted her to squeeze the trigger, but it's like, is that the real route that she wants to go? I mean, because there was the hint that her dad was handcuffed to the bed, so he was obviously had done something that
I figured he might
didn't fit with the law or anything.
Because I was thinking, because if you look at his knuckles, they were tore up. Something maybe so he just kicked somebody's ass.
He stood
ass.
Up for somebody
or his daughter or something. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of, I think it's a very sad story, but it also, I think it brings you into thinking, and, you know, it's one of those that there's a lot of direction that people can go with this. A couple things that came to mind was this could be, you know, anti-gun, but, you know, don't leave a gun where a kid can access it, you know, type thing. And then it can also go the route of the effects of TV violence on her, but that's her out, you know? So it's like, where is it going? Or anti-bullying? I think it's that I think as a person looking at this, I think it's, you know, you got to take that extra step for the kid that seems isolated, you know?
Yeah.
And isolating themselves.
I think that was sort of the, maybe the overall message. It might have been sort of equal parts of all of the above, you know, that you just mentioned. But obviously it was the confluence of events that kind of led her there, and all of these, this perfect storm of shit, not to mention her finding this old gun and her dad's stuff.
But the thing
I would like to add, as a person who kind of really personally understands what she kind of went through in some degrees. I guess the thing I would say is like what kind of James said was, even if you don't like the person or they're strange, there's still a person, and the person will always, you know, they're a cry for help.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that I got, is she didn't, there was nobody there anymore that would answer her cry.
Yeah.
And do you have any more to say?
Yeah, I was going to bring up this last point. When we're looking at shorts, I look for something that stirs a discussion or makes you think and does it in a very succinct way and doesn't waste time. And I think this one actually really fits the bill on it. I was actually, I didn't really know what to expect, you know, try to come in at a blank slate. And, I actually enjoyed the fact that it came in and made you think. And, you know, I really got to say hats off to the girl who did a fantastic job. I do hope you continue on with acting.
Yeah.
So I think you got a career there somewhere.
What do you give it?
I don't know. For me, it's not a perfect one out there. I think there was some things that kind of distracted me. Like I said, I felt a lot of different influences on it, and I would have liked to have seen something a little bit more I don't want to say original, but, you know, like the directing style to kind of stand alone outside of it. So I actually give it a 4 out of 5. And I think that was the only thing that kind of, I was like, you know.
So I'll be honest, I give this out of 5 out of 5, because I think this is simple storytelling at its best.
Yeah.
This lets you immediately, within a couple, at least a minute or two, understand everything. You're immediately into it. You immediately understand, and you emphasize it with the character.
Yeah,
empathize, and that in any length of film. I mean, even with Matchstick Men, I don't think you empathize with the character as much as you do with this little girl.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a 5 out of 5. You know, even I love the directing, the color. I even love the soundtrack. So
yeah, that was another thing. I thought I don't know what you guys filmed it in, but it was very clean,
beautiful film.
So very clean. And I do give you that as well.
And I love the background shots. Honestly, I'm just a really big fan of this film. If you can't tell. And Ryan, you're up.
I'm with James that I'd kind of like to see something maybe a little more unique to his own style of filmmaking. That being said, I mean, truly, truly great performances. Matilda, whose name I don't have in front of me, but
Randall,
good on ya. The editing and the composition style I thought were beautiful. I thought it was a great look of the movie. Great way to tell the story. I can't wait to see what this guy does with a feature length.
I hope to see more of your stuff.
So what did you give it, Ryan? Just a 4?
A 4, as well as James. Again, not perfect, but really, nothing to quibble about on this. I thought it was
I mean, just the reason why it's not an extra point is it's a very fine line of almost that extra point. It's close, but
when people start out, you know, especially doing short films and things like that, you end up kind of doing a lot of things that you were influenced by as a youth or when you kind of first got into it. So some of that I can forgive as, I mean, just somebody finding their style.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he's yelling at me right now. So like I have stuff. But you kind of know what I mean. You sort of inadvertently, you know, grab a little Scorsese here, a little Tarantino there. And I'm not saying he did that, but it was definitely
a
love for the genre of Westerns and was filmed as such. Yeah.
So if you out there in TV land, podcasting land, whatever the particular your proclivity is, you want to call it, if you want to keep in touch, if you want to see what this gentleman's up to, it's shunkfilms.co.uk. Check him out. We recommend that when you're able to watch this, you watch this. We want to thank you, Mr. Holbrook.
Spell shunk for people.
It's shunk films.co.uk. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And hopefully everybody out there in TV land, we'll be able to watch it soon. We personally here at Real Flicks Reviews want to thank you.
Yes, we appreciate being let in on this. It was actually very exciting to sit down and watch something that we were requested for. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if anybody out there has ever watched Real Flicks Reviews, you understand we're a giant fan of short films.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be doing another round of short films soon. We can't really say when, but we will, because everybody here loves short films.
Yeah, and Ryan's up. He needs to
batter up.
So I'm picking what I feel is an underrated movie?
That's a bingo.
Yeah, you usually follow me. Do you have a show as well?
If you can't tell, apparently he didn't do his homework.
Like a half an hour ago, but I've promptly forgotten it. Hopefully I can remember by the end of my spiel. Okay, so Matchstick Men... Totally agreed. Underrated movie. Asks the question, who's conning who? I ask another question, James and John.
Okay.
Who watches The Watchmen?
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So this movie, I'm kind of going through because I sort of took this one seriously. Like, what do I feel is like an actual underrated movie? And Zack Snyder, who recently sort of bombed, and I gave a lot of shit to for Batman v Superman,
made
Watchmen in 2009. Okay, going through like Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb and checking out just sort of random ratings and things like that. Come across Rotten Tomatoes, and this is getting like a 65. To me, this is egregious. So I'm making everybody watch it.
Okay. And so, do you have a television show?
An episode? Television show. Episode. I know I had something, which I can't think of. Maybe it'll be on the internet by the time we post this.
So just do me a favor. Let me know what it is.
Yeah,
I imagine that would be the way it gets on the internet.
Pretty much.
That's a great start.
So I gave the movie Matchstick Men a 4 out of 5. James gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a similar 4.5 out of 5. We gave The Simpsons episode a must watch. And for the short film, A Girl and Her Gun, written and directed by Paul Holdbrook. I'm sorry. Which I gave it a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 4 to 5. Ryan also gave it a 4 to 5. We give it when you can see it. You've got to watch it. And as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye.